Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 12th of September. And before we get started on this hour's program, I'd like to note a correction. On Monday's 10 o'clock show, we used the word murder to characterize the Trayvon Martin shooting. The word was not accurate. We apologize. The events surrounding the killing are in dispute, and Zimmerman awaits trial for second-degree murder. So our apologies. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about the last boys picked, helping boys who don't play sports survive bullies and boyhood. And our guest is interesting, has a very interesting background because she's a family psychologist, and she's also the mother of twin boys, one of whom is very athletic and one of whom is not. Our guest is Janet Sasson Edgett, child, adolescent, and family psychologist and author of the book that I just mentioned. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. I think we'll get a lot of calls on this subject. I think it strikes home with many of you. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Janet. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Yeah, our pleasure. So you started writing the book 7 years ago, and what a perspective. 9-year-old twin boys then. Austin, a terrific athlete, and Jake was not.
Right, right. That's right. Actually, I have three boys, and the twins are the two younger ones. But I noticed early on that, you know, these differences and this difference in athleticism and how comfortably they were able to use their respective bodies was a huge difference. It was a difference that had meaning, and that's what got me thinking that there was really something here, because the difference in, you know, how athletic one was or how much one liked to like sports was a lot bigger of a difference than what they liked to do or what they were good at. It had a meaning in terms of how they felt about themselves and how they looked at each other and how they looked at themselves, and even as concrete as what it was like for each of them standing at the school bus stop down at the end of the road. For one, it was 5 or 10 minutes of fun and games and playing around and running around, and for the other, it was excruciating and self-conscious and very difficult.
Do we have a cultural dismissal of boys who don't embrace sports?
Oh, I think we have a tremendous cultural dismissal, and I think it harkens back to way, way back. I mean, even the origins of this whole country being about frontiersmen and the Marlboro man. And I think this our cultural ideals about men being rough and tough and physical and brawny really is very much present today. And it filters down into the things that we say to our children and the ways that we look at boys who play sports and those who don't. And I think it's become so institutionalized in our culture that it's really hard to get away from it. And so it's hard for these boys who don't fit the image of this, you know, brawny firecracker of a kid who's aggressive and competitive and wants to go out there and smash them up and, you know, that kind of thing. Not every boy's like that.
Talk about those boys, and this really is poignant for a lot of families, and I'm sure for young people. I grew up at a time when girls weren't allowed to play very many sports, so we didn't. But to be on that little league team or to be on the kickball field and being picked last to be on a team, it is such an incredibly humiliating experience. What do you write about that?
It's unbelievable to me that, first of all, it's unbelievable to me that it was ever allowed to take place. And then it's even more unbelievable that it still does.
Yeah.
But this still takes place. I still get letters and I see communications and emails about parents whose boys are still being picked last. And most of the time it's an informal setting. It's not really sanctioned by the school. But occasionally you even find it there. I mean, I remember a story that Beth, the woman who helped me write the book and think about it, Beth Margolis Rupp, she's living in Abu Dhabi right now, and her son goes to a school there. He was 11 at the time when the phys ed teacher actually lined up the boys and said that they were going to have the captains choose which boys they wanted on their team. And Beth's son, Ethan, knew that one of the boys from England was not a very athletic boy and was going to be picked last and very humiliated. And he actually went over to the phys ed teacher, a pretty brave move, and said, I think if you do this, so-and-so is going to get picked last and will feel really bad. And the phys ed teacher actually listened to Ethan, thankfully, and changed the way that, that the teams were going to be chosen. But, I mean, this is just such a horrible method for choosing and to allow children to be in control of this. I mean, it's almost sadistic. It's really awful. There's always those few kids left at the end, and they're kind of staring down at the ground.
I know. It's cruel.
I mean, it's horrible.
It is. It's cruel.
And, you know, and the thing is, Kathleen, I think all of us in some way have been that boy picked last in one setting or another. It may not have been on the playground or in the neighborhood lot, but I think we've all, you know, brushed up against that experience of standing there and feeling that you're not wanted or you're being excluded or you're not part of something. And it's a very, very painful and very humiliating feeling when it's done in public.
How did Austin and Jake deal with this issue?
They dealt very well with it, but they had help, and I'd like to think that that really made a difference. The boys were very close, and they remain very, very close. But interestingly, their lives outside of the home are so very different in terms of activity and friends and so on. But inside the home, they're very close. Now, they joke and they play together well, and they can tease each other about their different abilities, and Jake is always ragging on Austin because Jake is very into politics and understands all that's going on with the election and the debates, and he sometimes will test Austin, like, okay, Austin, like, who's so-and-so's running mate, and gets a kick out of Austin not knowing that. So they have their thing, and it really is in good fun. It's a very warm humor. But I remember early on thinking, wow, you know, what do I need to do as a parent to protect this relationship, because I could easily see where it could where the difference in them in terms of athletic ability could become a divisive factor as Austin became more popular and got confident, and Jake struggled to find his place in school and, you know, with friends. But I never allowed any kind of teasing. I never allowed them to make fun of one another. I tried to encourage them to really have each other's backs. And they did. And it's interesting, Kathleen, because Austin's vulnerabilities, I mean, he had them. They just weren't as apparent. But Jake knew them, and Jake protected Austin. And Austin would protect Jake. I would find out later that Austin actually would step in when Jake was being bullied in certain settings and would actually physically intervene and, quote, take care of the situation. I mean, I found out about this years later. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I didn't know this was going on. So Austin would protect Jake in that way. And Jake would protect Austin because he had some anxiety and some separation anxiety. So when they were at camp, for instance, and they were younger boys, Austin would get homesick, and Jake was very, very careful to stay with Austin, be with him, stay with him in his cabin, and do those things. He never had to be asked. He just knew where Austin needed help. And so they learned to be each other's supports and have each other's back.
Oh, that's nice.
That way to grow up in that way.
And Jake experienced bullying in part because he was not into sports, or is that a stretch?
No, that is true, but I think it compounds over time. I mean, I don't think every boy who's not into sports gets teased because either, A, they're in an environment where that's not critical, or B, it's the type of boy who just owns who he is. You know, there are people who can just own who they are, and no matter
how
you know, different it is or how much of a departure it is from the expected behavior or type of person, they carry it off, and they bring people with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but a boy who looks at the peers being athletic and looks at himself and says, I'm not, and also, I mean, Jake had some trouble with, I mean, moving his body in physical ways wasn't as pleasant and easy. He's a mild muscle coordination disorder, so catching, throwing, running, climbing are difficult, and that attitude. It wasn't just that he didn't like them. He wasn't particularly great at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you notice that the peers notice, and then you notice the peers are making meaning of this, and they tend to gravitate to the other kids. And then I think a lot of it depends on how a child self-defines. You know, there's something, either they could say, there's something the matter with me because I don't like that and I don't do it well, or there's nothing the matter with me, but I have a little bit of a, you know, of a difficult path ahead of me. But if the child internalizes that and takes the teasing to heart and then doesn't feel confident and then gets marginalized, it kind of just takes different trajectory over time, and they end up in a different place.
And it can be tragic. It can be very, very serious.
It can be absolutely very tragic.
Yeah.
And I think we've all seen these faces and
yes.
heard the names of children for whom it's become so tragic that they chose to end their life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, wow, you know, people don't realize it. You know, people think, oh, it's just teasing, it's just boys being boys. But that's not all that far away from a child feeling so marginalized and so isolated that they think of taking their life or actually over years of that do. It's not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
It's very painful.
You also write a lot about, because you look at our society and the way we love football in my house, good grief, people watch hour after hour of football, and I'm kind of a jerk, actually. I say, please, do we have to watch all this football? But this exaltation you talk about,
yeah,
of the physical,
right.
And we need to learn to appreciate the other males who have many other sensibilities. But our society as a whole, look how many people, you know, watch sports. Look at where schools spend their money.
Absolutely.
Look at who the heroes are in schools. It's all over the place.
It is all over the place, and there's such an aggrandizement of the sports champion. I mean, the Olympics.
Right.
I mean, and true, I mean, Olympics, it's very cool, and they are very heroic figures because of their discipline and devotion. However, there's a lot of other guys, and there's a lot of other people who are doing other things with their minds and with their bodies, and we don't pay enough attention to that always, particularly with boys. I don't think we're making enough effort to draw out the boys who bring to the table other qualities, who are empathic, who love music, who love the arts, who are sensitive to the dynamics between people and are good ambassadors and are very diplomatic. And there are all these other qualities in people that we say we value, and we do value as a culture, but not always is apparently with boys. And I think that's the message we need to give some of our boys that show these other abilities, is that these things are important too, and that we see it in them. That I see this in you. I see these things that you could do. And maybe other people can't see it, but I see it, and I love it, and I value it.
Right.
And, you know, I remember, Kathleen, when actually Jake was maybe 6, 7 years of age, I remember thinking to myself that I needed to tell him that the world may think that all boys are supposed to play sports and love sports, but that sometimes the world is wrong, and that the world was wrong about this, and that I wanted him to know that I knew, that he knew, that not being very active in sports and liking them could become a problem with the peer group. And I said to him that the kids his age, and particularly the boys his age, value how fast you run and how high you climb and how much you like to wrestle and play super soaker and run around and do all these things, but that as he got older, the things that were so valuable in him would become more obvious to people. I told Jake that the things that he was good at and that I valued in him were, in a way, invisible to the kids his age, and that he would have to wait and be very patient. I said the things that Austin does well show on the outside, and the things that you do well show on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And kids can't see it yet, but they will. But you're going to have to wait.
I know, and that's so hard when you're 6 or 7, or even if you're 13
exactly.
or 14. You've got to wait. Believe me, wait. It'll be all right.
Wait, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think if parents could give their boys this message and say, I see it, and grandma sees it, or grandpa, or your mom, your dad, your brother, we see it in you, and we hold it dear.
Right.
And we love that, and it is important. And maybe right now other people aren't going to see it, but we do. And hold on to it and wait.
We're going to take phone calls for Janet, and we'll take them in a moment. She's the author of The Last Boys Picked, Helping Boys Who Don't Play Sports Survive Bullies and Boyhood. Janet Sasson-Edgett is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and the Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a reminder to you to read Common Sense by Thomas Paine for the first entry in our Back to School Club. I've read the intro. I need to remind myself I have a lot of books to read every week, but it's his life was extraordinarily interesting as well. It's our Back to School Book Club, and we'll talk about Common Sense, our first book, Wednesday, September 26th during the 10 o'clock hour. And you can also access a free online copy when you go to WPR.org and click on the Kathleen Dunn Show. Halfway down our show page is a link to our book club page, so it's easily accessible for you. All right, two phone calls for Janet, the author of The Last Boys Picked. Matt is our first caller in, how do you pronounce this town, Matt?
Ontonagon. It's in the western UP.
Oh, Ontonagon. That's a nice name. In Michigan. Hi, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank your guests for bringing this subject up, because both my wife and I were involved in sports, but we didn't get into them until probably about eighth and ninth grade. And a big part of that was because we were both bullied. And I started, as I got older, I started putting two and two together. And I think subconsciously, one of the big reasons why I didn't want to go out for the major sports like basketball, football, baseball in particular, was because I noticed how these young guys in particular, but the girls get the attitude too, that they just get this really foul attitude towards the other social groups in school. And you know, I think I'm a man's man. I'm a Gulf War veteran. I'm a police officer, have been for a couple decades now, and what I've taught my son, he has three girls that were all athletes, sisters ahead of him, and what I taught my son is that, you know, you don't have to be involved in sports if you're not interested, which he isn't. He likes outdoors things. He likes biology, that type of thing, animals. And I said, but you do have to respect the fact that, you know, other people may like athletics. And what he went into, as well as his older sisters, were modern dance. And he actually got a little bit of ribbing at first until the kids in both parochial schools and the public schools that they were attending realized, wow, this isn't, you know, the regular athleticism that you see, but this guy's pretty good.
right.
I like that. This guy's pretty good, yeah.
Right. No, it's true. I mean, you know, in a sense, it's this unfortunate divide between, the kids who do athletics and the kids who don't. And I think there's a lot more that schools and communities could do to bridge really a gap that doesn't have to be there. I know what you mean, Matt, about, you know, the sort of the stereotype of the big-time varsity player. And these are the kids who are the cool kids in school, and they do get a lot of social regard. They have a lot of social equity, we could say, and they're pretty powerful kids. And I think they could also be our leaders in changing some of the school cultures by saying, hey, you know, we don't have to be big and important at the expense of other kids, that we all have a place in this school community. I think if we could just, you know, select or identify some kids who are willing to do that. And I think there would be many kids on these, you know, high-profile school teams who would be willing to make some kind of statement and overtures to bridge some of the relationships between the kids, you know, the theater kids, the bandies, the, all these groups that become identities and have names, and they're kind of all off in their different pockets. And it's really unfortunate, but, you know, I think in some ways the schools really reinforce the sports piece, because what do you hear in the morning on the announcements? You don't hear about, you know, kids who are going out and doing, debate team, or some of the school clubs that develop business leaders in the community. You're hearing about the sports, the scores, and, you know, what team won this, and so on and so forth. And that's all great news. I mean, I love sports. I am an athlete. But I would love to hear what other kids are doing. I would love to hear what kids are doing some pretty cool community service things. What kids are, you know, doing activities and very devoted to them but are outside of the school curriculum. Which kids are doing dance. Which kids are doing horseback riding and really committed to that and rising in their particular sport. I mean, there's all these other things that we don't hear because the noise of sports is so loud.
It is so loud. Dick in Waukesha, hi.
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 Hello, Ontonagon. I used to live in Waters Meet.
Oh.
That's why I called. When I was a kid, I lived in northeast Jersey in a small town, maybe 6,000-7,000 population, and three blocks away from where I lived, and there's a lot of other kids around. There were vacant lots where the builder went broke during the Depression. He had cleared the land for building, but he didn't build anything. And it had... Yeah, quite kind of weedy, but anyway, it was playable. And I was tall and skinny, and nobody ever picked me. I think literally I never got picked to be on the team. But I would stay there, and when the game got going, I would just join in and pick a team myself. And didn't seem to bother anybody. Football and baseball, I wasn't very good at either, I guess, but then we had another thing in our favor. In our backyard had been the whole area had been a big Dutch estate way back in the time, and a lot of trees. They had cut a big cherry tree out of what became our yard, apparently, and there were seven sprouts in a crescent when we moved there, maybe four and a half inches in diameter, black cherry trees, and we lived in those trees. In those days, boys didn't wear shorts, but we wore dungarees, so we could shinny up and down black cherry trees. If you've ever been on a black cherry tree, you know that the bark is rough.
Yeah.
But we all climbed around in those trees. We'd go to the radio store, man, and beg... is that the radio consoles came in, big boxes, and whining, you know, he'd grouch, and he said, well, you have to take them all. Little did we know we were doing his work. But
Right.
How do you get to be what Dick was describing as somebody who's fairly unfazed? You may have been picked last, but that's all right. You hang around long enough, and you just join the game. And that's...
terrific resource. It's a great resource to be able to say, well, I'm not going to be defined by you guys. It's not possible. I'll just find my own way in there. And I think it's likely to be, for most kids, a combination of basic temperament and you know, upbringing and what messages they've internalized from parents and family and, you know, kind of how they have personally digested the messages they get from larger society and their peers. You know, some kids take it at face value. Other kids say, well, you know, I have my own way of looking at things. And it's very healthy. It reminds me a little bit of the story in the book about told by Bill, who was at the birthday party when he was a little kid. And the birthday boy's father came out and, you know, got all the boys playing a football game. And, you know, Bill had some spatial orientation difficulties, and anyway, the ball came his way, and he caught it, but he ran the wrong way in the backyard, and the birthday boy's father just lit into him.
Aww.
And Bill is staring at this man, and first he's just so embarrassed and humiliated, and, you know, he feels terrible, And then this, it's like he suddenly realizes, whoa, wait a minute. Who's the real loser here?
Right.
I'm a kid.
Right.
All I did was run the wrong way. You're a grown-up at your son's birthday party, and you're yelling at me? I mean, really? And it was in that moment, in being able to sort of transcend the immediate experience of humiliation and redefine it as, wow, this is really, it may be bad for me, but it really looks bad for him.
Yeah.
And take that away. And I think that a lot of that is the individual of the child.
Jessica on Facebook writes, my sons are much like the guests, the older one very athletic, the younger not at all. My question is, should I keep encouraging the younger one to try sports? Mostly we do this to promote an easy way for him to get physical activity, but is it best just to let him follow his own interests?
Well, I think that's a terrific question. And I think in part, you know, I think it is good to encourage children to try different sports, I mean, for reasons of physical activity and you know, just for the social value out of it in the sense of being able to hang with your friends when mm-hmm. they do different things. But, you know, there's a big difference between pushing and pushing a child in a direction they don't want to go and encouraging and showing them different things and exposing them to different variety of sports and physical activities. There are a lot of physical activities that aren't necessarily sports, but that provide the child with a social environment and exercise, hiking, kayaking, training dogs. There's all kinds of things. So I think it's terrific. I think a lot of it depends on the way it's broached on the part of the parent. I think kids know when their parent is really saying, hey, we'd love for you to explore some of these opportunities with different activities and sports and see if there's something that you like. We're not going to push you to do something you don't like, but we would like you to be open to new ideas and to stretch a little bit. You know, because some children won't do things that they're not good at. And that's a different issue, and that could be a problem. Some kids will avoid activities because they really don't like them, and some kids will avoid activities because they don't like doing anything that they're not good at.
Right.
And that's where a parent might want to push a little bit and say, listen, I want you to be okay with doing something and doing it poorly. I want you to have a little bit more batting practice, so to speak, at going out there and messing up or understanding that there's a bit of a learning curve here and being okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do that and if you feel like in public you can only show yourself to be good, your world is going to get very small.
Right. You can't you can't just do English. You've got to do some math, too.
Right, right. So, I think it's a great dialogue for the parent to have with the child and say, you know, how are we doing here? Are we finding new things? And if you do it together from the same side of the fence, it could be a very positive experience.
Kim in Superior, hi.
Hi. I'm amazed at the timing of this program because I recently moved to Superior from a Northwoods community simply because of the bullying. My two sons and I left our home. We left my fiance, half our pets, everything of 10 years just to get away from it. And we've actually been battling this for 10 years.
Wow.
The reason that we did so long was because we moved to the community when my daughter was in the eighth grade. And when, things weren't going so good for my youngest son, but he was in first grade. So you figure, well, we'll give it some time. And she says, I really like it here. I don't want to leave. I'm going to be in high school soon, so, that's the way we kind of see how it went, try to get her through. And everything was good for her. She was cute and popular, and everybody liked her. But my boys, on the other hand, were, non-athletic and just quiet. And, she made it through fine, but it never got better. It just kept getting worse for them. And then what happened was when she graduated, the plan was that we were going to leave. And then a new kid moved to town, and he was also like my son's. And my youngest son made friends with him, and he said, well, I won't leave him. I won't leave him here.
Wow.
We have each other, and what if I go somewhere else and I get the same thing? At least I have one friend. So for 4 years, he had the one friend, and they skated by. They kind of got by and tried to avoid situations and things so that, it wasn't too awful for him, but then last year his one friend did move, and he was all alone again.
Mm.
And it was it was horrific, and it was like he's an 11th grader this year, and so we moved just so he could have hopefully two peaceful years of high school without. I mean, it got to the point where he couldn't even take gym class because they were doing all this stuff in the locker room.
Janet,
it's just so sad, and I think he's very lucky to have a parent who's really looking out for him and trying to figure out what a solution is, even to the extent of moving, which is huge.
Yes.
Yeah, but it really makes me wonder, what are we doing that, what do we need to change in the upbringing of so many kids where bullying is, it's almost like sport to them. I mean, it's just so sad to me that there's so many kids who exploit the children who are weaker or different in some way, that you find it everywhere, that they take it, a lot of it is surreptitious. You know, it's in the locker room, it's in the back of the bus, it's in the middle of the lunch line where nobody could see. And these kids are left defenseless there because there is nobody around, or often, and even more tragically, the teacher or coach or supervisor is saying, oh, it's just boys being boys, I went through the same thing too. Well, that's not a very helpful statement. And I think this dismissal of boys being boys is very problematic and allows for a lot of bullying and frankly cruel behavior to be going on. But I think, I think we need to be doing more about helping communities raise children who aren't interested in bullying, aren't interested in making somebody else feel less, but are interested in contributing, helping the people around them to feel bigger. I think there's a lot we could be doing about that, and that's sort of the civic piece here, is how can we build belonging in our communities, in our homes, and with the kids or among the kids that are children that have to go to school with and play
with. Well, heavens knows it shouldn't have reached the point where Kim had to move out of town.
Right. Sometimes, there are a lot of people who don't want to hear about this, or they say, you're making too much of a big deal about this, or, he'll be fine. And no, not necessarily. I mean, this is very, very painful. The experience is so isolating, and as you get older, it's even harder to go to your parents or to go to other people and ask for help because you feel, I'm in high school, maybe I should be able to take care of this myself. But you can't. It's bigger than you. It's huge, and it's pervasive. And once a group of kids kind of has your number, they sort of, they keep coming back for more, and it's horrible.
Yeah. What advice can you give Kim to, I keep thinking of her isolated son, to bring more people into her house, to bring more people into her son's life? There are people out there who are good-hearted, good children that way. How do you find them?
Absolutely. And they're all over the place. And
right.
The bullying, they really are. And I'm just, focusing on the bullies to make that point. But I think, finding out what are the communities where your child would feel comfortable. Where are the people that he or she, well, in this case, he, would like to be with? What are activities? I find that a lot of kids who have been on the outside and felt excluded do wonderfully in community service settings because that's a place where they can feel valued and where their abilities to whatever it be, to listen, to talk, to comfort, to read, to talk, discuss different things is appreciated by a community of people that is other than their immediate peer group. So that can be a tremendous resource for parents to help their kids identify a community in which they can give back.
Good idea. Thank you, Kim. Email from Eric. I have two sons. One's athletic, one is not. They both did the circus arts camp this summer. I was especially pleased to see my non-athletic son gain confidence in his athletic abilities. He went from not enjoying sports to wanting to show off his stilt walking and trapeze abilities.
Great.
Should parents help kids improve their sports ability?
Oh, I think it's a great idea, especially if the kid is enjoying it. I mean, I think, it's an interesting thing. Our country is so sports-driven and so competitive that the kids who do sports these days are really good at them, and it could be intimidating to other kids who might want to participate in sports but are a little backed off because they think, I'd like to try this, but I'm not going to be really good.
Right.
And And so they stay away from it. And so they never have an opportunity to really experiment with it. So sometimes that has to happen in a different arena, like this circus camp. I mean, that's just great to be able to
Sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Does. You know, maybe some of that will transfer back into some of the, quote, traditional sports in schools, and maybe it won't. It doesn't have to, but it can be a way back into that because you do get confidence and you realize what you can do, and then you can re-enter some of the more traditional sports with a little bit feeling you're bringing a little bit more to the table. But I think that's a terrific idea.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go sideways to go forward.
Kathleen in Bailey's Harbor. Hi, Kathleen.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
I really appreciate the opportunity to share some thoughts about this issue. I went into teaching as an older adult. I was in my late 30s, and I began in a middle school in southeastern Wisconsin. I saw bullying flat out there. There were students I was afraid to turn my back on. I eventually went and went into Montessori education, where there's an emphasis on peace. I knew from my experiences that anti-bullying programs alone were not enough. They would never, ever be enough. The problems that you're talking about and the experiences that your callers are sharing are not the fault of the children. They're our fault because we are failing to address and give them the skills and the experiences that they need to be different kind of people who look for the good in each other. And because we don't do that, we're seeing the kinds of things that we've seen for a long, long time. So here are some of the things that I did when I was teaching. I'm not teaching anymore, but I still work with schools. I was in a classroom in Gurnee, Illinois last week, and I was working with children who were 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 years old. And here, this is what we were, some of the things that I did with them. I worked with them and talked to them about really important questions like, who am I? Who am I? Every life has purpose. What's the purpose of your life? And if every life has purpose, and if there's essential goodness in every single one of you, if it's in you, it's in everyone around you. And once you go to those issues with children, they get it. I have done it with children, again, as young as 6. They get it because it's about the essential human condition. So once you address with them that there is in them something big and something good and that it's in everyone, you teach them to start looking for it. And you teach them by doing things like giving them language so that they can learn how to affirm each other. I'm not just talking about compliments. I'm talking about true, authentic affirmation. So when I talk with children and we're in a discussion and someone's, you know, talks about, oh, they were left out. They were left out. They were out at recess and they were alone, you know, and you talk to them and you say, how many of you have ever felt like this? How many of you have ever been alone? And they all have, because human beings all have. Mm-hmm. And what does it feel like? And you see it in their faces. It doesn't feel good. So we talk about, we need to look out for each other. We need to look out for someone who's excluded. We need to look out for someone who looks like they're in trouble, who looks like they need a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I would do things like, before the children went out for lunch and then for the recess afterwards, because that was always a difficult time, I would remind them, I would say, be on the lookout to see what acts of kindness you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Be on the lookout to see who else is doing good deeds. Watch for those who need a friend. And then when they came in from recess, they'd gather around. I had an affirmation book, and I would say to them, tell me what you saw, what acts of kindness, who helped you? And one by one, they tell their stories. I was alone.
All right, we need to hold it there, Kathleen, because we have so many callers. We need to have more of that. What she talks about is terrific.
It is wonderful. I think they're terrific ideas, and I think, you know, she's absolutely right about the adults having to hold really ourselves accountable, not only for the messages that these children are hearing, but for our role in changing it. I think, you know, children are our mirrors, and they show us who we are and what we value and don't value.
Mm-hmm. You point out in your book, too, sometimes those car moments are so important, that if your youngster is complaining about somebody, that you can stop conversations, or at least say, you've got to say what you think. If you're a teacher, yes, and you hear that in the hallway, sometimes it's all you need is 10 seconds to call people out on that, to make them think about something else.
That's right. It's right. It becomes too easy to just let a comment slide. But I think a parent, you know, for instance, if you have, see your son, you know, ribbing your other son because he's not athletic and saying something like, oh, what would you know? What would you know about sports? Rather than say, oh, don't talk like that or don't tease, to stop and turn around and say, wow, I mean, of all the things that you could say to your brother right now, why would you choose that? Not trying to humiliate or embarrass, but just to say, like, wow, like in this place, this should be at least the one place in the world where none of us have to worry about that from each other.
Exactly.
Because he's going to get enough of that from other people
right.
in the world.
Yeah. More phone calls momentarily. Our guest is Janet Sasson-Edgett. The book is The Last Boys Picked, Helping Boys Who Don't Play Sports Survive Bullies and Boyhood. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Lines are finally open for you right now, one of them. And our email, if you'd like to use that, talk@WPR.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And our next call is Dan in Frankville. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, I guess that sometimes that can go in reverse. A lot of people, like you were talking about, some kids committed suicide. Some of them, they normalize it, and they become the abusers. There's that old saying, the abused become abusers. I know this guy in junior high school. They went on for years. I didn't know it. I thought that he wasn't really fazed by it because he's sort of a husky guy, and they used to hit him in the arm all the time. And one time... I looked at his arm, and it looked, I mean, I was young, and I thought, holy cow, he has cancer in his arm. I mean, it looked so terrible. I'd never seen anything then or since then that looked like human tissue. That was because the stuff went on for years and years, and he was a super nice guy. I told him he was bigger, and then he finally attacked one of the kids, and then I guess because of my urging, and then... to protect himself, and then he got expelled from school for a couple of days. He came back with a funny thing was I met him later on after high school, and he was a super calm, like meek sort of type of guy, but he had joined the Marines, and it was like he's hypnotized. I mean, he wasn't even the same person. He really got into actually killing people. I mean, I normalized the conversation with him because I'm thinking he's not really responding. And I talked about, yeah, you know, it's no big deal. You know, people die, this and that. And he was like, God, I'm glad if a guy finally opens up. Yes, you know, I feel good. I mean, he liked killing people.
Wow. Yeah, that's really something. I mean, that is for some people the only out that they see. Is to turn it around and pass it down the line. And especially for some kids in school, that may be the only way to get the bullies off your own back is to turn around and take out somebody else. And it's almost a survival thing, and it's a very sad thing. But, you know, I guess at times it just really kind of calcifies into the personality, and that's who that person becomes.
Joshua in Madison, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that when I was younger, I was picked on a lot, and I pretty much was kind of an outcast. I was very creative more than athletic, and my parents took me out of school and homeschooled me from fifth grade till high school, and I wound up graduating earlier than a lot of the other classmates that would have. But I just looked at what they were doing and just saw, you know, hey, I don't want to be like that. But, you know, there's just a lot of my personality that just was, and I'm not condoning bullying by any means, but there's a part of bullying that you take and it helps you deal with bullies outside of school. And deal, because there's always going to be bullies in the workplace, in, you know, on the street and everywhere you go. So, I mean, it just helps me at least deal with, be confident enough to deal with bullies and learn how to do things my own way, not just the way that everybody else does it. I had to learn to do math in my own way to make it seem make sense.
Janet.
Yeah. I think, I think the real important point here is that we do have to equip all kids with a voice to say, no, I don't like this, or no, this, that's mean, you can't do that. Because I think the gentleman is right. Bullying is everywhere, and in some ways it's not as apparent or it's more insidious, but it's in the workplace. It could be in all kinds of places. And I think, you know, part of this isn't only helping these boys, and but also helping them by teaching them how to speak up. I think we've done a very good job in some ways of teaching girls how to say no and speak up, but I don't know that we've done the same with boys. But teaching boys to say, no, I don't like this, or no, you need to stop, I think is critical in helping them not only get through school, but like this gentleman is saying, really navigate through life in a lot of contexts where they're going to come up against someone
right.
And muscle their point across.
They need to tackle bullies at many stages in life. Garth in Sun Prairie, hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to share an experience that in high school I was an athlete, and I was a star athlete in both football and baseball, but I also loved math and science. And even in my senior year, I was in AP calculus. But because of my going out and still wanting to be, hanging out with math and science nerds, you know, said, I was picked on by even my fellow teammates. That because I was hanging out with other people, you know, and I'd get one or two fistfights a year.
Oh, my gosh.
To defend myself, you know, and even though I was a star athlete, it can go both ways. And so, you know, the whole thing, even if you're an athlete, and you still try and reach out, there still can be repercussions from even your teammates that, you know, you're out on the field of battle with. So.
Right.
And yet you write in your book that it runs contrary to what you say, that athletic ability can make intelligence acceptable, Janet.
It can. It can. You know, it's for some kids who, you know, who are smart and would otherwise be sort of a nerdy, identified as a nerdy kid and not really popular, you get, you know, some good points for being athletic, and you can sometimes, you know, pass for being sort of nerdy if you're athletic. It can really counteract one another. But, you know, every situation is different, you know, and for some cases it's just not enough. If the culture is, you know, sports, all sports, and only sports matter, and, you know, that culture of peers is very strong, then they'll try and keep their buddies in line and let you know that that other stuff isn't cool.
Mm-hmm. Dan in Marathon County writes, when I went to my child's graduation a couple of years ago, the majority of the topic was sports. Parents commented on the principal's speech. I would say 30% of his talk about academics. The other 70% talked about the school's sports programs. The big issue is the sports culture in our schools.
Right, right. I think, again, administration in schools can be doing a lot to really point some more focus on non-sport things. It's hard because you start doing that and then the parents might complain because they like the sports emphasis. I mean, it's really so embedded in our community and in our institutions now. But, you know, it's interesting. I think the timing is right for a shift because I think in many ways the call-up now is for all people, but especially for boys now, to be kids that have a broader repertoire, that we need boys to be able to function in a very complex society with more than just, you know, brawn and you know, strength and the, you know, physical prowess. I mean, you know, the whole call of to be able to mediate, to be compelling as a speaker. I mean, business, politics, or social problems all call for people who can be leaders with a wide variety of skills. And so, in a sense, it's a good time to talk about these other abilities and how we can reinforce them in our children, and particularly in our boys, and say these are valuable too, and we want to see them in you and draw them out and let them know that they are valued for that in addition to the other things that they can do on the playing field.
Mm-hmm. Finally, if we can do this briefly, Barry in Kenosha. Short on time, Barry, but go to it.
I got a bullying is well known to be in school, but as far as adulthood, it can also happen in your own household or just outside the household. I have a great girlfriend. She's got two wonderful kids, and I have kids of my own as well. and her ex-husband has a tendency to bully her just because he's bigger than she is. He makes fun of her and does a lot of stuff. Now, usually he doesn't do it here at the house when I'm home because I step out, and I've been bullied myself when I was in high school. But as I got older, a lot of the people started, not doing that. Now, as far as my son and my daughter goes, I've been very fortunate that my son goes to a very small school and a very big farm community.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as she is, she went to a really big school where she was very well-liked amongst her peers. But then as she got older, she started running into a lot of people that just started picking on her because she's really short.
And on that, we have to end. I guess it's just a lesson that we deal with it through much of our lives. So we may as well start with this childhood thing and get it done right. Janet, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks for the book.
Kathleen, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Janet Sasson, Edge It. The book is The Last Boys Picked, Helping Boys Who Don't Play Sports Survive Bullies and Boyhood. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers who produce this program.